Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their Summer Splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
March Madness certainly is college basketball, of course, this month, and the frenzy around that. But it also could be another way to describe the week that was with NFL free agency. Players being traded and, you know, all kinds of, you know, interesting movements in free agency and surprises all over the place. To make some sense and interpret the tea leaves of NFL free agency and all the trades that were, we bring in Dan Schneier from CBSSports.com, and he is a co-host of Big Blue Banter podcast. Hey, Dan, how are you?
Hey, Lori. Always happy to be talking football with you. I'm doing great.
So let's start with, what was the most surprising move of free agency for you? What was one move that you looked at and was a head-scratcher for you for one reason or another?
Well, it wasn't a head-scratcher for me in the sense of I'm not so sure I support it, but I was not really totally expecting Saquon Barkley to go ahead and sign with the Philadelphia Eagles. After the fact, it makes a lot of sense, but you know, during and before, Howie Roseman, the Eagles GM, has not made a history of investing in the running back position. Even last year, he found a way to get a pretty damn good talent on his roster, but he didn't have to give much. It was a late-round pick swap to get DeAndre Swift going into a contract year. And then, you know, he went for it, and he signed Saquon Barkley. And I think it indicated maybe a little bit of a feeling of the Eagles starting to creep into their minds as their window closing here. Jason Kelce retired. They're starting to get into a position where Jalen Hurts' contract from a cap standpoint, from a cap percentage standpoint, is going to start to catch up with them because they obviously, you know, prorated the deal and kicked a lot of the cap back. So I'm starting to feel like Howie Roseman might be feeling like that window is starting to constrict a bit and he needs to make moves now.
So let's start with Saquon Barkley leaving the Giants. And as you said, I was surprised that it was Howie Roseman that gave that sort of high contract for a running back. And how did you feel from the Giants side of things? How did you feel that Joe Shane and the Giants handled that, losing Saquon Barkley, not giving that contract, turning around then and signing Devin Singletary? Were you okay with it, with this strategy and the way the Giants handled the running back position?
Yeah, I was more than okay with it, Lori. I think this entire offseason for Joe Shane, we can put the quarterback decision aside because it's a big one, but it's going to, you know, take some time to see how that unfolds. But everything else was kind of along the lines of what I've been preaching and what I've been hoping the Giants might do, which is a reallocation of resources into the trenches and away from the skill position players. Xavier McKinney, a safety, great young player, but he plays off the ball and he's not involved in every play. And Saquon Barkley, great player, but also a running back, dependent in some ways on his offensive line and on, you know, having an ex-alpha receiver to take away coverage and have the safeties and the corners playing a little off, a quarterback to use the entire field, things like that. In addition to, you know, some signs, Lori, about running backs in their age 27 season, that's what Saquon Barkley is entering. A little bit of decline by the numbers. Not to mention, if you look at kind of the advanced stats with Saquon, Lori, his yards after contact per attempt is way down since his rookie year. His breakaway runs, they're way down. He had 9 runs of 40-plus yards as a rookie in 2018, only 1 over the past 2 seasons. So there are signs that led me to believe the Giants are making a good decision for their future. They've tried this thing, the core of Saquon Barkley, Daniel Jones, and everyone else. It has brought them to 1 playoff win, but not much else. So I felt like it was a good decision for the Giants at the time. I was just still a little bit surprised of the Eagles who went ahead and signed him.
Now, in terms of Devin Singletary, I know there are a lot of Giants fans that were disappointed. They lost Saquon. I'm with you. I've been clear about that and public, whether it's on the radio here or on social media, that I just wouldn't be investing in the running back position to that extent of the contract the Eagles signed. But with Singletary, what would be an ideal running back by committee approach? What type of players, who would complement Singletary, and how should this running back by committee be filled out by the Giants?
Yeah, it's a great question, Larry, because it's going to be a change from what we've seen. It's really been Saquon handling the load almost fully, and now they're going to a committee, like a lot of other teams have. And I think Singletary has a lot better film than people realize. When you really sit down and watch him, and that's what we tried to do on the Big Blue Banter podcast, try to figure out what kind of running back he is. He does things that don't always show up as far as, you know, does he run the fastest 40-yard dash? No, but is he processing runs well behind the line of scrimmage, picking his blocks, setting up his blockers, and setting up the lanes that he wants to run into? Yeah. And is he creating missed tackles and forcing missed tackles on defenders? Yeah, he actually does a really good job of that as well, and the advanced stats back that up. So I think he's going to be that veteran they needed one way or another moving on from Barkley. You can't just come into the mix and say, look, especially if you have a new quarterback, a rookie quarterback, which we don't know if it'll happen, but no matter who the quarterback is, Larry, you can't be like, all right, Eric Gray, you haven't played much. You're going to protect the passer on third down. Gary Brightwell, you haven't played much. You're going to protect the passer. So as far as who fits him, I think the Giants just need to kind of find a bunch of different backs who are as effective on their own independent as a Devin Singletary. You maybe add somebody through the draft or later in free agency, but I think it will mostly be either through the draft or they might rely on Eric Gray, the second-year player who they really liked this film of, and I did too, out of Oklahoma. Didn't really get many opportunities last year, but when he did, showed some juice. And you know what's funny to me about Eric Gray and the way his running style is, kind of like running in and out of those small spaces and setting up his blocks, it does remind me in a lot of ways of Devin Singletary. And they're not too far off from a size standpoint, too. So they might be building a room of very similar style runners.
One of the obviously huge areas, you mentioned the Giants building through the trenches and focusing allocation of resources on that. Both the Giants and the Jets, the biggest thing coming into the offseason, and it was obvious and has been for years, is needing to build an effective offensive line. How do you feel that both the Giants and the Jets have done this offseason at attacking the offensive line?
Yeah, it's a great question, Lori. And I feel like it's been the question that's been on our minds for way too long right now.
A decade? With the Giants, it's been a decade. With the Jets, though, it feels like ever since Nick Mangold and Ferguson.
Yeah. And that was getting close to a decade, too, so it's kind of crazy. We'll start with the Giants, the team that I cover. So they took steps in the right direction here, Lori. I don't think it's anywhere close to a finished job, but they took steps. And the first step was signing John Runyon. And I think the biggest indicator of that was, if you look at the splits, he's a much better pass blocker than run blocker. And it's a really interesting sign of the direction the Giants are going in as a franchise, as far as what their vision is on offense. They let go of their Saquon Barkley, their star running back, their lead back, and they start to transition some of these resources to pass blocking offensive linemen. But the one I really love the most, and they signed two depth signings as well that could come into the mix later on, Austin Schlottman, who they actually gave a two-year deal to, and Aaron Stinney. We'll see what happens there, more developmental prospects. But the one I really like is from the Raiders, and that's Jermaine Illuminor. And the reason I really like this signing is twofold. The first one is he can play right guard. He can play right tackle. He's more comfortable on the right side. But his best snaps have come at right tackle, and his best snaps have come last season. He's an ascending player. And why do I like that so much, Laurie? We've seen the Evan Neal situation, and a lot of Giants fans looked at this free agency, Laurie, and they were pissed because they were like, why didn't we just sign one of the two top guards, Robert Hunt or Michael Onwenu? Well, instead, they did something I think that was more important. They got actual insurance for Evan Neal at right tackle. What if they just went into the season like they did last one with no plan but let's hope Evan Neal can play up to an NFL par level? And then, you know, when you're caught with your hands in the cookie jar and you don't really have any kind of backup, because at that point you can't really find them on the waiver wire or through the draft, really, to be honest.
Or you can turn poor Josh Azudu, who didn't take any snaps in training camp at left tackle, and throw him in when he's completely right. Ill-prepared. That could be a strategy, too.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in-store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
Right, and it was not a good strategy, as we all saw, but Jermaine Illuminor has snaps, and he's coming in with the offensive line coach, Carm Basila. I always say that's really important. We saw it 2 years ago. It helped John Feliciano win the battle. I think the reason it's so important is when a new offensive line coach comes in, and Carm Basila will be replacing Bob Johnson, they teach a whole different style of how to play offensive line. It really is a big difference. I watched a clinic from Bobby Johnson, then I watched the clinic from the Buffalo Bills offensive line coach who replaced Bobby Johnson. I'm blanking on his name right now, but really good offensive line coach. And it was just a totally different clinic on how they teach the way it's played. So I think he's going to have a leg up, Illuminor. I would not be surprised if he has a chance to actually win that right tackle job, to be honest, going into the season. We'll have to see where Evan Neal is at, recovering from another injury. But I just love the idea of getting actual insurance for Neal, a real player who's played the position and has a leg up because he comes in with this offensive line coach.
Aaron Cromer? Offensive line coach. I have the benefit of sitting here and looking it up. I know the name, but I, off the top of my head, wouldn't have remembered. But that's the Bills offensive line coach. I have to say, I love that with Illuminor, the whole Evan Neal thing. I think that I get into this discussion argument with Giants fans that who feel like, oh, it's too soon to move on from Evan Neal. And my point is, I'm not saying the Giants should move on from him, but I don't think you can hand him the starting right tackle position after what we've seen from him. And if that means he has to compete for the job, and maybe he loses it, and maybe he has to now compete for a right guard job, okay. And maybe he ends up the swing tackle, and he's an improved swing tackle until somebody gets hurt and there's an opportunity. All of those are fine. Those are roles on the team that are useful. But I don't think, based on what we've seen, that he should even go into camp as like, oh, he's the starting right tackle. Like, I think there should be an open competition there.
I completely agree with you on that, Lori. And I think, you know, we've seen this play out in Giants history. The Giants didn't want to draft over Matt Parrott a few years ago, a player who they invested a third round pick in. They're trying to develop him. And it stymied their whole development of the right tackle position in general. There's no scholarship at the NFL level. I think you said it best that, you know, he hasn't proven yet, at least, that he can play at this level, at an above average level, or even an average level, to be fair to what he's put on film so far. And that's, you know, there's circumstance for it. He's been injured both of his first 2 years, but at the end, you know, there's been development issues across the offensive line for the Giants, really with the exception of Andrew Thomas. Everyone hasn't developed the way we hoped. Even in his rookie season, John Michael Schmitz, he was solid, he was average, but we were expecting maybe above average, even as a rookie, when you go up top and you take an interior offensive lineman with a draft pick that high. So I'm with you. I think it should be an open competition, and honestly, I think it will be at this point.
All right, turning to, you know, we said the Giants offensive line. How about Joe Douglas?
Yeah.
Early in free agency, there was a sense of, what are the Jets doing? He's sitting out on it and all this stuff. And then you give it a few days this past week, and suddenly the Jets, it seems to me he did a really nice job with the offensive line.
I'm with you on that, Lori. I think you have to look at it as, what window are the Jets in? The Jets aren't in the window of, they just drafted C.J. Stroud, let's build an offensive line around C.J. Stroud. They're in the window of, we have maybe a year, maybe two, of Aaron Rodgers, a Hall of Fame quarterback. We can afford to make our swing on a player like Tyron Smith, for example, who actually is coming off one of his best seasons in a while, but is course, an older offensive tackle with an injury history. So you're really banking on, you know, this win now window. Morgan Moses, another player, he played for the Jets, and then he went to Baltimore and he played pretty well for them. And they're bringing him back. He's an older veteran, someone who has experience playing the position. So I feel like everything Joe Douglas did was within the window of where the Jets are at. And I was bullish on the Jets last year. I was wrong, I guess, if you want to call it that. Obviously, you can't predict injuries. But I can't help but look at their roster again and feel like they have a shot to really do, make some noise this year.
The other thing that was really interesting to watch this past week was also the impact of all the trades. And so a lot of quarterbacks got traded, but also, if you're a Giants fan, you certainly noticed that the Minnesota Vikings went out and traded for another number one draft pick. So now they're sitting on two number ones. And that, you know, the only reason to go ahead and do that is because they want to try and trade up for a quarterback in this draft. And so if you're the Giants and you're sitting there at six and you possibly think this is a four quarterback draft, and there are the Vikings sitting there at 11, but now with two first round draft picks, what would you do? What would you be willing to give up? What would be your approach?
It's really interesting because I want to first break it down, Lori, from the Vikings standpoint. You know, there's reports, who knows if these are confirmed or unconfirmed. At this point in draft season, I take everything with a grain of salt, but you listen to it and you take it in, you consider it anyway, because some is going to be true and some are leaked. But I think I would have to imagine that this one might be true, that there have been preliminary talks with the Vikings and the Patriots as far as, look, if a quarterback that, if we get to the third pick, and I'm saying from the Patriots standpoint, and the quarterback we want is not there, then we're open to business. But that's an if. And if you're the Vikings, you have to at least have some kind of framework, I would think, of a deal in mind for that scenario playing out. And I would think that getting that 23rd pick in addition to the 11th, to kind of, you know, you look at the trade chart, the trade value charts, you kind of match it up and you're like, okay, and they'd have to add, in my opinion, a 2025 first as well. You look back at like the 49ers trade as an example, moving up to Trey Lance a few years ago. But there has to be some kind of framework in mind. So if you're the Giants, you're thinking they're probably moving up to three. Now you're kind of thinking, who do they want? Well, Josh McCown, who was just hired as quarterback coach for the Vikings, was Drake May's high school football coach. So there might be some kind of connection there. So I think from a Giants standpoint, it just depends how many of these quarterbacks you feel can be franchise-altering quarterbacks. And I say that, Lord, because I really do believe strongly that the why for the Giants this year, if they're going to go with a quarterback in round one, to me, the why can't be, look at our depth chart, look at what we have, Drew Lock and Daniel Jones, this isn't going to cut it, we need to take a quarterback with Saquon. Because I feel like that thought process is what drove them to Daniel Jones in 2019, and that is not really a good process in my mind. It has to be, to me, this quarterback can be a top 10 or top 5 quarterback in 4 or 5 years when we have to sign him to a second contract and allocate $50 million. Otherwise, game manager type or someone who's just above average and maybe can win if he gets a perfect lineup around him. It's just you're putting too many variables into the mix. So if I'm Joe Shane, I'm considering trading up if I believe that that guy at three who's still on the board is a guy who can be a top five, top 10 type of player in the NFL.
All right, let's assume, what if the top three teams do take quarterbacks and now the top three are gone and we're talking about J.J. McCarthy or Michael Penix Jr. I would not be taking Bo Nix at six. But what have you seen as you've been scouting and breaking down guys like J.J. McCarthy and Michael Penix Jr.?
So to be fair, I have not seen a whole lot of J.J. McCarthy yet. I just actually watched his Ohio State game in 2022. So from 2 years ago, but I've only through one game, but I've seen a lot of games of Penix. I've been scouting Odunze, a receiver who I think the Giants are very interested in. So I'll start with Penix. He's a quarterback who, right at the college level, was throwing to all areas of the field. That's really impressive to see. The arm talent is clearly there, and he has moments of throwing with anticipation, which you love to see, throwing receivers open, typically outside the numbers, though, Lori. What concerns me with Penix is his usage of the middle of the field and trying to project that to the NFL level. And what concerns me about Penix is his stats and his numbers go way down in muddy pockets and under pressure. And he just really, in my opinion, doesn't have the foot speed to really avoid reset these pockets, avoid pass rushers. I worry about how that translates to the next level. And I think most importantly for Penix, the reason I don't think he's going to be in consideration on day one or even all the way up at pick six is because of the injury history. So I'll start there. As far as JJ goes, from the little I've seen so far, he's an interesting prospect because I think a lot of what when it comes down to McCarthy is projection. You have to kind of project where he's going to be at when he, in my opinion, he grows more into his frame. And more importantly for me, Lori, he becomes a better quarterback. Like right now, I feel like there's still a lot of processing. I don't want to say the word processing. I still feel like there's a lot of quarterback to be learned because he just hasn't played a lot of football and he just hasn't really been in a lot of conditions where he has to throw the football. He has done well on third and longs and on situations where he has had to throw it, but I just need to see a little bit more of JJ to feel comfortable there. But obviously, there are traits that NFL teams love from an arm talent standpoint, velocity, his ability to create out of structure, his athleticism as a runner, the ability to throw outside the numbers as well, and the ability to throw on the move, specifically when he's rolling to his right. So there are traits to work with there, but I think it's going to take a little bit of time.
With all the movement at the quarterback position, what did you think of Justin Fields and the trade to the Steelers?
So I love it from the Steelers standpoint. I love everything they've done at quarterback this offseason. They signed Russell Wilson for basically the veteran minimum because the Broncos are paying $39 million to him. So now you just get essentially for free. Then they trade for Justin Fields. That's a $2.5 million cap hit, essentially for free, a sixth-round pick that can turn into a fourth-round pick, but that's only if he plays a lot for the Steelers, which will probably be a good thing, considering you know he does have the talent and upside to win that job. So I loved it from that standpoint. If I were the Bears, and I think part of this process here, Lori, from what I've heard, is they were trying to quote-unquote do right by Justin Fields because four teams were interested in Fields, and they gave him to the place that he wanted to go. You know, that's one thing, and it's great, and it builds good, I guess, karma or whatever you want to phrase it. But if they had waited until after the draft or they had waited until August, and times get desperate for teams at the quarterback position, I think they could have let this market play itself out. I'm not saying Justin Fields would have gone for much more than that, but maybe they could have got a fourth, a future fourth. Maybe they could have got a future third if things got really desperate for a team at the quarterback position with an injury. So I just didn't think this was the right timing for the Bears, but obviously they wanted to, one, do right by Fields, and two, by the time rookie OTAs roll around, they didn't really want, and people are in the building, they didn't really want Fields to be in the building with this rookie quarterback.
Yeah. And in terms of the Brian Burns trade, the Giants obviously making a big trade with the Carolina Panthers for an edge rusher. Did you like that trade for the Giants?
Yeah, I loved it, Laura. This was my favorite move of the offseason by the Giants. It's twofold for me. I love the reallocation of resources towards the trench players, the players who win on the defensive line. I love what this could mean for the Giants' defensive line with Brian Burns, Dexter Lawrence, and Kayvon Thibodeaux, what it could mean for Thibodeaux as well in his development. But for me, a lot of it comes down to what I've seen from Brian Burns. And I think when you make these trades and then you make the signings, so they sign to a five-year, I think it's 135. It was originally reported as 150, but I think it's 135, $135 million deal. You're paying for future production. You're not paying for what they are right now as a player. That's what the Giants tried to do with Daniel Jones last year. Obviously, it might not be working how they wanted, but with Burns, I think his best years are ahead of him, just from what I've seen on tape and how I envisioned his fit with Shane Bowen, the Giants' defensive coordinator. That's the key there, because Shane Bowen, the Giants' defensive coordinator, likes to get to those third and long situations and run a lot of wide nine looks where the edge rusher is just going to have a really nice path. And what Brian Burns does best, in my opinion, is his get off the line of scrimmage, his ability to just kind of beat the tackle to the spot, get around the edge. So I'm really excited about him. I think his best years are ahead of him, and I think he's going to make this Giants defensive line really, really good.
All right, Dan Schneier does a great job breaking down some of the X's and O's from CBSSports.com, co-host of Big Blue Banter podcast. Dan, always appreciate the time. Catch up with you soon.
Thank you. Always great.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their Summer Splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in-store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.